We begin with a Shanti Mantra, peace chant. This is on page 48 of Universal Prayers, top of page 48. Om Apyayantu Mamangani Vak Pranaschakshu Srotram Atha Balam Indriyani Cha Sarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Ma Brahma Nirakarot Anirakaranam Astu Anirakaranam Me Astu Tadatmani Nirateya Upanishatsu Dharmaste Mayi Santu Te Mayi Santu Om Shanti 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 Om. I pray that all aspects of my personality, including the body, mind, sense organs, the vital force, speech and all sense organs, may they all become strong and function in perfect concert. This whole physical universe, visible through the sense organs, is nothing other than the ultimate reality described as Brahman or Atman in the Upanishads. May I not reject this truth? May there be no rejection from either side. May I accept this as the starting hypothesis for my spiritual life. May there be no rejection of this truth at all. As I am engaged in experiencing this truth in my life, may all the virtues, such as truthfulness, straightforwardness, strength and purity, described in the Upanishads, may all those virtues come and reside in me. May all those virtues come to me and reside in me. Om peace. May there be peace in our hearts. Adhyatmika Shanti. May there be peace among all the beings. Adi Bhautika Shanti. May there be peace everywhere in nature. Adi Daivika Shanti. Good morning. The topic for our study this morning is Beyond the Three Gunas. The concept of guna is difficult to describe because there is no accurate English word which fully conveys the meaning of the word guna in Sanskrit. In Sanskrit also, guna has different meanings. Guna also means a rope. Guna means quality. But here, the concept of guna that we are trying to understand was developed by a sage named Kapila, and the philosophy that he propounded is known as Sankhya philosophy. This is a peculiarity of the Indian thought. There is freedom of inquiry and freedom of expression. We do not limit perception of reality to one view and say this is all. So that is why throughout the ages, many eminent and some not so eminent philosophers have come up with their views of reality, of the world, of the individual, of the relationship between the two and of something which may be called God in common parlance. So Sankhya philosophy was one such philosophy which was propounded a little bit later than probably Vedanta. There are some differences. While Vedanta says there is only one ultimate reality, which is described as Brahman or Atman in the Upanishads, and the multiplicity we perceive is nothing other than that reality appearing in this way from our perspective. One appearing as the many. And how one thing can appear as the many, which it is not, is explained with that oft-repeated example of a rope appearing as a snake. There's only one thing. There's no rope, there are no two things, rope and snake. Only one object is there. But it's being misperceived. But the whole universe is nothing but Brahman. That's what the peace chant, we just know, chanted says. Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam. The whole universe is nothing other than one ultimate reality, absolute reality called Brahman. Also Atman. That is a Vedanta view. But the Sankhya philosophy that Kapila propounded admits of two realities. One is called Prakriti or nature, the whole physical nature that we are experiencing, whole world, whole universe, whole creation is called Prakriti. And the other reality is Purusha. Prakriti is somewhat, we can say, is matter, and Purusha, we can say, is spirit or consciousness. So two things are there. Not only that, according to Sankhya philosophy, the Purushas are innumerable, infinite number of Purushas, beings. So it's a different view of reality than the one that we study in the Upanishads, Vedanta. The Prakriti is nature. It is made up of three components. The three components are called Guna. Now, according to this philosophy, Guna is not a quality. It's not an attribute of some other substance. It is itself the substance. There are three things which make up this whole universe. They are called gunas. To understand this, they gave an example. If there is a rope made up of three strands interwoven together, becomes a rope. There's one rope, but made up of three strands. The strands are not qualities. These strands are parts of the Prakriti, parts of the rope. To understand still, some Indian women have their long braids. Three strands are made, the long hair, and they are woven together. And the three strands, they make one braid. Like that, Prakriti is one, but it is made up of three different things. And those three things of which Prakriti is made up of, they are called gunas, guna. To understand this, to get some idea of what a guna is, we can recapitulate Sri Ramakrishna's familiar parable of the three robbers. A merchant was passing through a wooded area in the evening, having sold all his goods, and with the money, sales proceeds, he was going home. But he took a shortcut through the woods to go home. When he was walking through the woods, he was accosted by three robbers. They caught hold of him, they took away all his property, his money, his gold Rolex watch and whatever jewelry he had. They took everything. And then the discussion ensued. What to do with this guy? One robber said, let us kill him. If we leave him alive, he will go to the police and give a report, and police will come after us. So we don't want to leave him alive. Let us kill him, one robber said. The second robber said, no, why to kill him? Let us tie him up with a rope to a tree and we can escape. And he'll be here tied to the tree, and however long it takes for him to become freed, or he may die, tiger may come and kill him, we'll be safe. Second robber suggested that the person should be tied, bound. The third robber didn't say anything. He was watching. So after some discussion, they tied him up to a tree. They didn't kill him. The second robber's suggestion was pursued, and then they escaped. After some time, the third robber came back, the one who had said we should let him go, let him free. So he came back, he unties the knot, frees this person, and shows him the way to his village. Go this way, and in this direction you will go to your village. The merchant was deeply beholden to the third robber because he came back and saved his life, untied him, set him free, showed him the way to his home. So the merchant invited the third robber, sir, please come to my home, to my village, and I want to give you some reward for you have saved my life. You have showed me the way to freedom. The third robber says, no, I cannot come. If I come to the village, the police will know that I will be there. They will come and arrest me. So I will go back and join my other robber brothers. So he went back. And then man went home, reached home. This is the parable that Sri Ramakrishna says in the gospel. The three robbers represent the three gunas. The first robber who said we should kill this man represents tamas. Tamas is one of the three gunas of Prakriti. Tamas signifies impurity. It will kill a person. Violence is involved. Impurity, inertia, sloth, ignorance, these are the qualities of tamas. The second robber who suggested that this man should be tied represents rajas. Rajas indicates activity, energy, dynamism, passion, desire, combined with anger, these things. These are rajasic qualities. The third robber who came back and freed this man and showed him the way to his home represents the sattva guna. Three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas. Sattva represents compassion, purity, love, and shows the way to freedom. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, there is the discussion of gunas comes in several places, mainly in the 14th chapter and 17th chapter, and to some extent in the 18th chapter too, and some other chapters too. Gunas are mentioned. One thing that we study from the Upanishad, from the Bhagavad Gita, is that everything in this whole creation is qualified or made up of these three gunas. There is nothing in this whole creation that is free from the three gunas. All human beings, good people, bad people, male, female, educated, uneducated, rich, poor, any nationality, all human beings, animals, plants, things, inanimate objects, situations, they're all combination of the three gunas. Sattva, rajas, and tamas are there in everything and everyone. Now, there is one important verse in the second chapter of the Gita, verse number 45, something that we should start our discussion with. Gita is the main source for the study of gunas. There's not that much mention of gunas in the Upanishads. There, Bhagavan Sri Krishna says to Arjuna, verse number 45, chapter 2. O Arjuna, this whole creation is made up of the three gunas. There's nothing that is not qualified or touched or limited by the three gunas. But you have to rise above the three gunas, transcend the three gunas. The very important instruction Sri Krishna gives to Arjuna is transcend the three gunas. Go beyond the three gunas, he says. Now we should understand why this instruction was given, why we should transcend the gunas. As it is, we are all qualified by the guna. Everybody has sattva, rajas and tamas in different proportions. Some people are predominantly sattvic in nature. They are calm, peaceful, loving, compassionate, morally pure. They don't tell lies, they don't cheat, they don't steal. Such people are called sattvic people, sattva. They also have some rajas and tamas, because when they are active, rajas comes into play. Once in a while, they may become a little bit upset or angry. So tamas is also there. So in everyone and in everything, all the three gunas are there, but in different proportions. Sri Ramakrishna gives another example. If you have pure gold, is 24 karat gold, is pure gold? If you have 24 karat pure gold, you cannot make any jewelry from it because it doesn't have the quality to retain the shape. Some degree of other element, copper or something, silver has to be added so that it can retain the shape, can make some things out of it. So if a person is pure sattvic, 100% sattvic, then he won't exist here. He will become one with the divine. If a person exists in this world, he may be 99% sattvic, but some rajas is there, some tamas is there. That's why he can exist here, function here. Activity is possible. Some people are predominantly sattvic in nature. A little bit of tamas, rajas may be there, will be there. Some people are predominantly rajasic in nature. They are given to activity, desire, passion, movement, noise, do this, do that, accomplish this, go here, do this, become famous, make money. All activity desires are there. Not necessarily bad, rajas, but this rajas means activity, desire, passion. And some tamas is there. Once in a while they become a little bit angry or something. And they also have a lot of sattva. With the money they make, they may use it for charity, etc. Some other people are there who are predominantly tamasic in temperament. They are slothful, given to violence, and telling lies, cheating, stealing, doing all kinds of bad things. But they have a little bit of sattva is there, not completely absent. Right? A lot of rajas is also there. So this is how this whole universe, everything in it, all objects in this universe, people, animals, plants, things, inanimate objects, planets, stars, sun, moon, everything, everything is made up of these three gunas. Now the instruction in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 45, given by Sri Krishna to Arjuna is, while everything is made up of the three gunas in this universe, you transcend the three gunas, nistrayigunyo bhava Arjuna. That is the instruction. What does it mean? Why we should transcend the three gunas? And what are the gunas and how to transcend the three gunas? And what happens when you transcend the three gunas? Three things we have to understand. Why to transcend the three gunas? Why not we just stay as we are? We have to know. If you know why, then we can do something. Second thing is, how to transcend the three gunas? What should we do? Third thing is, what happens, what benefit will come if you transcend the three gunas? Three things you have to understand. So one thing again is repeated in the 18th chapter of this Bhagavad Gita, verse number 40. There he says, either in this world or in the heavens or among the gods, there is not one thing that is completely free from the three gunas. He repeats that one. You have said it before in the second chapter. Second chapter 45, he said, Traigunya Vishaya Veda. The Vedas speak about everything which are qualified by the three gunas. Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna. O Arjuna, you become free from the three gunas. Rise above the three gunas. Not only that, he had a couple more instructions in 245. Nirdvando, Nityasatvastho, Niryoga Kshema Atmavan. All the instructions to Arjuna from Sri Krishna. Nirdvando Bhava. Dvandva means duality, pairs of opposites. We are all steeped in dvandva, all of us. Because sometimes you are happy, sometimes you are unhappy. The mind oscillates, happiness, unhappiness, sometimes in between. Sometimes good things happen, sometimes bad things happen. Things are not stationary. Everything is changing all the time. Dvandva. Sometimes we gain, sometimes we lose. Sometimes people praise us, sometimes people blame us. All these dualities are happening every moment in our lives. But Sri Krishna's instruction to Arjuna was, Nirdvandva Bhava, rise above the duality, do not be affected by them. Achieve a state of mind where you are not affected by the duality. What happens? What other people say? Some may praise, some may blame. What happens to you? You gain something, you lose something. Sometimes you succeed, sometimes you fail. But do not be affected by these dualities. You remain absorbed or stable in above the dualities. Rise above the dualities. Nirdvandva bhava. One instruction. Second instruction in that verse, Sri Krishna gives to Arjuna is, Nityasatvastha bhava. Nitya means always. Satvastha means stay in sattva. Remain sattvic all the time. Do not let tamas and rajas affect you. Stay in sattva. Why sattva? Because sattva, as you saw in the parable, shows us the way to freedom. Freedom in our case is liberation. From what? From the cycle of transmigration. What is happening now? We are born, and in this life we are experiencing some pain, some pleasure, some good, some bad. Nothing is constant. Everything is changing every moment. And this life is also transitory. We live for some time, we suffer, we enjoy. Then old age comes, the sickness comes, then the life ends. All this happens in the domain of the three gunas. But if you rise above the three gunas, then you are free from all these changes. You totally escape from the cycle of transmigration, which is called samsara. It's compared to an ocean. The worldly life is compared to an ocean, which is hard to cross. So if you cross the three gunas, you are crossing the ocean of relative existence, you become absorbed with the divine, you become one with the divine. Just like a river becomes one with the ocean and becomes the ocean. Giving up its individual limited identity. When the river is flowing, it has its own course, sometimes straight, sometimes crooked, sometimes wide, sometimes narrow, sometimes lot of water, sometimes not much water. All these variations are happening. It keeps on flowing for a long time, Eventually, all rivers end up in the ocean, merge in the ocean. Then what happens to the river? It no longer is a river. It becomes the one with the ocean. It becomes the ocean. If you add a drop of water to this cup which has water, what happens to the drop? It becomes the water in the cup. Part becomes the whole. Limited becomes the infinite. That is why we have to rise above the domain of the three gunas, nitya, sattva. And sattva shows us the way how to become free from the limitations of all the gunas, from the limitations. Nitya sattvastho, third instruction in 245 is niryoga kshema atmavan. Two more instructions. Niryoga kshema means become free from the concerns of day-to-day life. I want this, I don't want that one. This is good, this is bad. I don't have this, I want to have it. And I want to protect it. All these concerns bind us down to the relative plane of empirical life. We want to rise above these things and become absorbed in the divine, become one with the divine, absolute peace, Sachidananda. That is actually our intrinsic nature. We are that now. But because of whatever reason, Vedanta calls it Maya, we are not experiencing our inherent divine nature. We are experiencing our limited body-mind nature. Niryoga kshema atmavan. Yoga means acquiring things which are absent now, hoping that the thing if that is missing from my life, if it is supplied, I'll become happier with that contention. Acquiring things is called yoga. Kshema means protecting, preserving things that we have acquired. These are the two concerns all we have, most people have. So Sri Krishna says to Arjuna, become free from yoga kshema. Don't worry about acquiring things which you don't have, because things don't bring happiness. Our common contention is, if I have more things, I'll be happier. If I have more money, I'll be happier. If I have bigger house, I will be happier. This is our normal understanding, but that's not true. Rise above these things. True happiness comes in when you experience your divine nature that nothing in this world can give. So become, rise above the dualities, nidyoga kshema atmavan. Atmavan means become absorbed in the self. So those are the benefits of rising above the three gunas. We'll discuss more about it in a little bit. Now, this makes us think, if I become free from the three gunas, I still don't know how to, but we have to understand that. If I struggle and become free from the three gunas, what benefit will I get specifically? I want to be more specific about why I should do this one. If I know why, then I will be motivated to do that one. The benefits of becoming free from the three gunas are described in one verse in the 14th chapter, chapter 14, verse number 20. There, Sri Krishna clearly explains what will happen to us if we transcend the three gunas. How to transcend will come later. What will happen? What is the benefit? Why we should transcend the three gunas? That was the instruction given to Arjuna. Transcend the three gunas, rise above them. Don't continue to remain stuck in the three gunas, rise above them. So this is the benefit. He says, verse 20 in chapter 14, gunanetanati tantrin dehi dehasamudbhavan janma murtyu jara dukkha dukkaihi vimukto amurtam ashnute. If a person transcends the three gunas, etan trin gunan atitya, transcending the three gunas, dehasamadhavan, the three gunas are the components of which the body, mind, sense organs, and subjects are made. Whole nature is made of three gunas. You have to transcend them. What will happen? Janma, mrityu, jara, dukkhaihi vimuktaha. Janma means birth. taking birth either as a human being or as some other being, itself is a painful experience. We have forgotten it, but how painful birth was, we know at that time. Janma itself is an imposition of limitation on the self, limiting our existence to one body, human body or animal body or somebody, limiting. Itself is a limitation. Itself is a painful process, janma. Then whatever takes birth has to die also, mrityu. Death is also very painful. Janma, mrityu. Then in between, old age will come, jara. Jara means old age. Janma, mrityu, jara. Birth, death, old age. Dukkha, all kinds of suffering. Many, many different kinds of suffering. Health problem, financial problem, family problem, relationship problem, children problem, parent problem, job-related problem, you name it. All problems afflict human beings to more or less extent. So all these problems are binding us. And whole thing is changing and transitory. You will become mukta, freed from all these limitations. No birth, no death, no old age, no disease, no loss, no gain, no pain, no pleasure. You rise above all these dualities, vimuktaha, then what happens? Amritam ashnute, you will become immortal. Amritatva. Amrita, amrita means nectar. Amritatva means immortality. You will experience immortality. We cannot experience immortality as long as we are stuck in the trigunas. Why? Because as long as trigunas are there, body, mind, all these things are made of the trigunas. Our body, our mind, sense organs, all sense objects, which means the whole thing is made up of trigunas. But if you raise above trigunas, there is no suffering, no beginning, no end, no happiness, no pleasure, no pain, no price, no gain, no loss, nothing. You transcend above the whole plane of duality. And amritam ashnuti, you become immortal. One with the divine, one is immortal. Human life is mortal, divinity is immortal. You become that. Transcending all limitations. That is why Sri Krishna told him, rise above the three gunas, nistrai gunya bhavarjuna. Now the last question is, how to transcend the three gunas? What specifically, what things we have to do in order to rise above the sway of the three gunas? Five or six things can be noticed from the Gita. First thing is, one should develop a firm conviction that this present existence, which I am experiencing, body, mind, thoughts, and my possessions, property, name, fame, activity, all of these things, all objects with which I deal with, sense objects, are made up of the three gunas, which are constituents of prakriti. And who am I? None of these. What's your true identity? Vedanta says, you are that, tattvamasi. You are that. Who is that? The self. That's the whole premise of Vedanta. You are not what you think you are. Most of us think you are the body, you are the mind, I have this house, I have this job, I have this property, I'm happy, I'm unhappy. That's not the truth. You are that, tattvamasi. Famous Mahavakya in the Upanishad, you are that. So what happens? I distance myself from all these things. I objectify this whole universe and my life. And I become the witness. Become the witness. Instead of becoming the participant, you become the witness. Then you enjoy. If you want to watch a boxing game, or nowadays they have this mixed martial arts and ultimate fighting championship, all those things. If you jump into the ring, you'll get hit. But if you watch the game from the ringside seat, you can enjoy. So, don't jump into this relative world thinking you are the body, you are the mind, I'm doing this work, I'm succeeding, I'm failing, I'm happy, unhappy. Stay away, watch all this fun, we'll enjoy. You are not that. You are this, you are that. So distancing oneself, objectifying the whole life and all the phenomena, all experiences and watching as the subject, that is the way to stand away from the three gunas. There's a famous verse that you have heard me quote parts of it several times. We also had a Sunday talk on that one. Shankaracharya's six stanzas of Nirvana, renunciation, Nirvana Shatkam. It starts like this. Mano buddhyahankara chitta ninakam nacha shrotra jikve nacha grana netri. Shankara says, in Advaitin, he says, I am not the body, I am not the mind, I am not the sense organs, I am not the ego, I am not the sense objects. Who am I then? Chidananda rupa shivoham shivoham. I am that Chidananda, Sachidananda. I am that absolute perfect reality, infinite reality, total bliss. I am that. I am not the body, mind, sense organs. This is our common experience, common perception. It's misperception. Vedanta says, you are all in the spell of ignorance. A spell cast by the Maya, power of Maya, which makes us think something which we are not. Forget our true identity. So, a person who wants to rise above the Trigunas has to first of all develop conviction about this Vedantic truth. I am that self, I am not the body mind. That's a starting point. Objectifying the whole thing, life, all phenomena, and remaining as the observer, as the subject, as the Atman, as the Self, abiding in the Self. There was a book, it's no longer in print, I think, written by Swami Atulananda. Swami Atulananda was Gurudas Maharaj, Swami Turiyananda's disciple. Also, he had seen Swami Vivekananda. He was in New York. He was from Dutch person, Swami. He became a Swami and lived in Belurmat during his last years. So his book is called Atman Alone Abides. I don't see that book in print anymore. Atman Alone Abides. That's the truth. Vedanta says Atman Alone Abides. What about all the other things we are seeing? The Anatman, body, mind, sense organs, other people, good, bad, world, sports, politics, money. These are all like movies, scenes seen in the movie. They are not true. They are appearances. You are that, and that is the ultimate truth. So that devil conviction has to be developed. Then it gives us motivation to rise above this and become that. Second thing we have to do is practicing acceptance and forbearance. We have to accept that there are going to be vicissitudes in life. Good and bad will be there. Nobody's life is going to be always good, nor always bad. So we have to be able to bear that one, accepting it. Yeah, there is going to be good and bad. No one has been able to, from the beginning of mankind, no one has been able to orchestrate his whole life so that everything is always in his favor. Not been possible. Most powerful people, knowledgeable people, strong people, kings and emperors, all had to go through suffering, some kind of problem, some negative experience. So it's going to be there. But I am going to remain unaffected by them. I'll bear them. Forbearance. This topic of forbearance comes in many places in the Gita, in the Viveka Chodamani also. Early in the second chapter, verse number 13, 14, 15, some of us study that in the Thursday morning class. There Sri Krishna says, changes are inevitable in everybody's life. Changes such as birth. You can't stop, but you're already born. You cannot do anything about our birth. Growth, existence, change, parinama, apakshaya, degeneration, and death. These are going to happen to everybody, all beings, not only people, everything. Even the sun also goes through six changes. Six changes happen. Sun is born, it was not always there in the solar system. Like 5-6 billion years ago, sun came into existence. It will not always be there. Another 5-6 billion years later, sun will disintegrate. Whole solar system. Earth will also go long before that. Galaxies themselves come and go, disintegrate. That's the truth of everything in nature. So what we have to do, we learn to accept this and move along. You're not going to be affected by it. If I let all these things affect me, I'll always be unhappy. Something is happening always. So I develop the ability to remain calm and forbear everything without complaining, without lamenting. Titiksha, that discipline is called titiksha. We studied that one. Titiksha means forbearing. Sahanam sarvadukhanam apritikara purvakam. Whatever difficulty comes, pain comes, I am going to bear it calmly, without complaining, without taking revenge, without lamenting. I'll bear it. That ability has to be developed. The second thing we have to do, acceptance and forbearance, comes in many places in the Gita. Third thing that we have to do is practicing equanimity. Equanimity, equipoise. Remaining calm no matter what happens. It's very difficult, but we have to develop that quality. Throughout the Gita and other scriptures, this virtue of equanimity has been extolled. We have to do that one. It says, for example, when you do something, you either succeed or you fail. Usually a combination of success failure. Some part of our work succeeds, some part fails. It's going to happen like that. We don't always succeed. We don't always fail. You win some, you lose some in the game of life. So what I have to do, I take success and failure and remain calm, unaffected by that one. Remaining equanimity, equanimous in success and failure. Especially in regard to work and result of work. When something that you do does not succeed, we become very much upset. We equate our success, outcome of our work to the effort that we put in. That equation is incomplete, erroneous. Sri Krishna says, the outcome of your work does not depend entirely or only by what you put in as your effort, but by several other factors which interacting among themselves shape the outcome of your work. We don't even know what the other factors are. All this described in the Gita, we don't have time to go into details. We have done it sometimes. We have to remain calm in the face of failure. When we succeed, we don't complain. When we fail, we complain. When failure occurs, we have to remain calm after having done our best. My job is to do my job properly. Whatever is in my control, my effort, that I should do very well without cutting corners and cheating. Once I have done that one, the result is not in my hands, because result of my work depends not only what I have put into the work, but what other factors have contributed. Weather, for example. What other people do, for example. Nowadays, nothing happens solo. Everything is a group effort. And the person who is participating in your project may not be known to you. He may be in some other country. He's working at night when it's day for you. You don't know what he does. Your work depends upon what he does, how well he does. There's not that much you can do. That's the nature of work. So what we should do, Sri Krishna says, do your best and leave the rest. That was the topic of one of my Sunday talks some time ago here. Do your best, leave the rest. That's all we can do. We can do our best, nothing more than that. Equanimity in success, failure. Equanimity in praise and blame. People praise us, people blame us. Tulyanindastutirmauni. These are the characteristics of a true devotee of God, described in the 12th chapter of the Gita, verses 13 to 19. One of them, among them, is to remain unaffected by praise and blame. Then equanimity in praise and blame, in gain and loss. Sometimes we gain, sometimes we lose. Labha labhau, jaya jayau. So all these instructions are there in many chapters in the Gita, 2nd chapter, 12th chapter, 6th chapter, 5th chapter, many places the topic of equanimity has come, and you have studied that, and that is the third thing we have to do, practice equanimity. No matter what happens, I am not going to lose balance, I will accept everything, take everything in stride, and move on. Three things. Fourth thing that we have to do is to develop same-sightedness, samadarshitva. This idea of same-sightedness is a very profound idea. You can see this same-sightedness practiced by all the great sages, holy people. Same-sighted means looking upon everybody alike, everything alike. What's the basis for same-sightedness? Although the appearances are different, names and forms are different, deep inside everyone the same divinity resides. Whomever you are seeing, whatever you are seeing, whether it's a man or a person or a situation or inanimate objects or an animal or whatever it is you are seeing, what are you seeing? You are seeing the divinity present in it. Whole universe is pervaded by the same divinity. Many places in the Gita, Sri Krishna has said, I am present in all the beings alike. One place where I keep on repeating, you know, the Gita people are tired of me repeating this. The 13th chapter, verse 27, which was quoted by Swami Vivekananda. There Sri Krishna says, I am present in all the beings alike. Samam sarvesh bhuteshu tishtantam parameshwaram. Parameshwaram means Supreme Lord is present, samam alike. Sarvesh bhuteshu, in all the beings. Who is present? The Lord himself. He makes it even clearer in the second verse, 13th chapter. There he says, kshetrajnam chapi mam yiddhi sarva kshetreshu bharata. O Arjuna, I am the indwelling spirit in all the bodies. Regardless of the nature of the bodies, human bodies, good people, bad people, animal bodies, plant bodies, inanimate objects, earth, ocean, air, water, fire, sun, star, moon, whole of creation, I am there, alike. But we are not seeing his presence. We are seeing only good and bad and pleasant and unpleasant. Why? Because his presence is hidden behind the body-mind shield. And some people's minds are so pure, by virtue of spiritual practice, they have purified their minds, it becomes transparent, and the presence of divinity is clearly visible in their personality. We call them saintly people. If you go to a saintly person, what happens? No word need be said, nothing need be done. You feel the peace in his ambience, in their ambience. Just being present in them, near them, makes us peaceful. Nothing need be said or done. On the other hand, if you go to some other people, you feel very uncomfortable. You get some bad vibes. Something is wrong with this guy. You get that feeling. Same thing happens when you go to some place, somebody's house, you go, all peaceful and nice and sattvic, and you feel a sense of peace and joy prevailing in that house. If you go to some other place, something wrong in this place. You want to get out of that. But the same divinity is present in all. It's the personality, the body, mind, that reflects the divine presence to more or less extent. To the extent we purify the mind, to that extent divinity becomes more manifest in us. Sri Ramakrishna explained this when he went to see Ishwarachandra Vidyasagar. He told Ishwarachandra Vidyasagar in the second chapter of the Gospel, divine is present in all, but the presence of God is manifest to different degrees in different people. But he is present in all. So we have to develop the habit of seeing the divine presence in all, disregarding the shell of appearance. So our job is to develop an incisive perception that allows us to disregard, not be confused with the appearance, misleading personality, body, mind, pierce through this and see the divine presence right go to the heart of the matter, seek God in all. It's very difficult, seeing God in all. There was a topic of our discussion earlier. So same-sightedness. You can see this in the lives of great people. The well-known example of how Sri Sarada Devi, Holy Mother, treated Amzad. Amzad's story has come many times. This Amzad was an unemployed Muslim fellow. He had lost his job because the mulberry farmer he was employed as a laborer closed. And then he started stealing, thievery, petty thief, and put in jail, came back. He was a Muslim on top of that. Nobody wanted to entertain him. When he went to mother's house, she welcomed him and treated him with great love. Oh, my son, you have come, please come. They fed him food and talked to him nicely. Then somebody in the family remonstrated, mother, why are you lavishing this kind of love on this unworthy guy? He is a Muslim. He has gone to jail. He steals. You know what mother said? She said, Amzad is as much my child as Sharat is. Sharat is Swami Sharadananda, one of the most outstanding disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, the only one who could write the biography of Sri Ramakrishna. Sri Ramakrishna, the great master. She sees both of them alike, treats both of them alike. Why? What's it? There is nothing common between them. They are poles apart in their personalities. The only thing common is the divine presence in them. That is the same thing. So she sees that, disregards the personality. This is subject to change. Then what happens? Because Holy Mother saw the divine presence in Amzad, who himself was not aware of anything about this. He was not a holy, he was not a spiritual person. That enabled him to awaken, to become aware of his divine presence within him. That's what happens in holy company. Sri Ramakrishna often extols the virtue of holy company, exhorts us to seek holy company. Why? One benefit of holy company is this. When I go to a holy person, that holy person sees God in me. I'm not aware of God in me. When that holy person sees the presence of God in me, that awakens my awareness of God in me. That helps me to awaken, become aware of the divine presence in me. So eventually what happened? The dacoit who accosted Holy Mother in the wooded area where she was passing at night, Amzad, this person, both of them, and another person, Vinod, who was drinking and doing all kinds of things, all of them gradually, towards the end of their lives, became sattvic people. That's the power of holy company. They awaken in us our awareness of the divine presence within us. But that is present within us. So developing same-sightedness, seeing the same divine presence in all, is another thing that we have to do to rise above the three gunas. Fourth, two more things are there. Fifth one, in the 14th chapter of the Gita, verse 26, Sri Krishna says, we can rise above the three gunas and become fit for immortality, for liberation, by practicing the path of devotion also. Path of devotion also leads us to the same goal. There he says, Mam chayo avyabhicharena abhicharena bhakti yogena sevate. Bhakti yoga means the path of devotion. Chanting the name of God and remembering God's glories, all these things that you study in the Narada's aphorisms of devotion. And Sri Ramakrishna described it in many places. By following the path of devotion, also one can rise above the three gunas, Sri Krishna says. Then the last one, there are many, the last one that we have time to discuss, sixth one is the most important virtue of detachment. If you ask me to point out in one word the essence of spiritual life, only one word I have to use and convey this essence of spiritual life, all spiritual practice, I would say detachment. Detachment from possessions, from activities, result of work, relationships, from everything, name and fame, from body, mind, everything. then you become, if you detach yourself from everything, what remains is the divine presence within us. Many places in the Gita, Sri Krishna talks about detachment. How to become detached from our possessions? We have somebody has a house, couple of houses, and a lot of dresses and clothes and money in the bank and children and family. All these things a person has normally. How to become free from attachment to these things? A devotee does it in a simpler way. A devotee says, all this belong to him, not mine. Not mine, but thine, he will say to his beloved Lord. Oh Lord, this house I have, I may call it my house, but it's really your house. But what am I? It's in my name. I'm only a temporary resident, caretaker, house sitter. It is you. It belongs to you. Gave it to me because I wanted it. And I will stay in the house as long as you let me, as it pleases you. If you ask me to leave the house, I'll give you your house. You take your house back, and I am free. As long as the house is with me, as long as I reside in the house, I do my duty, take care of the house properly, maintain it properly, live in it, and then when the time comes to leave the house, I will say, thank you for letting me live in this house for so long. Now you take your thing back, and I am free, I am relieved, I am grateful. When separation comes from anything, separation from body comes at the time of death, separation from possession comes, separation from relationships comes, when any separation comes, if you are detached, we'll be able to give up the thing that is separating from us with a great sense of joy, relief, and gratitude, not with pain. Everything has come to us because we wanted them. Everything belongs to him. And as long as things are with me, I can say, I can tell, call them mine, my Rama, my Hari, my house, my room, my money. I can say, my body, my child, I can say, but I know they all belong to him, not mine. Why do I have them? Because as I wanted, nothing comes to me except as I have wanted it, expressed a desire for it. The Lord gave all these things to me only because I had asked for these things, then he gave. Since he has given, it's his. He will take it back sooner or later. Separation will come. All these things are there, I have to leave. Or I will be there, things will leave one by one or all together. When that separation comes, I should be able to say, I have taken good care of all these things that the Lord gave to me. I have done my duty by them. The time has come. Oh Lord, please take your things back. Thank you for letting me have these things, letting me stay in this house. You take your thing back. I'm free. I'm relieved. I've done my duty. I'm free. I'm grateful. Thank you for this opportunity. With that attitude of detachment, you should be able to leave everything. So that is detachment. So the topic of detachment is a very detailed and profound one. Many times you have talked about it, and there will be opportunities to discuss detachment, how to practice later. But I shall now conclude by chanting one stanza from Swamiji's Song of Sannyasin. And this is about detachment. Swamiji says, have thou no home? What home can hold thee, friend? The sky thy roof, the grass thy bed, and food what chance may bring, well cooked or ill, judge not. No food or drink can taint their self, which knows itself. No, thou art that, sannyasin bold, say, home, that's at home. Let us reflect for a couple of minutes.